What's up? Welcome to a new episode of Movie Schmovie. This is episode number 411, also known as 411. John, what else is that known as?
That's the number you dial to get the info.
The info. And we have got the info, my friends.
The info this week.
And by we, I mean my name is Steve. I'm one of the co-hosts of the show. And as always, I'm joined by
Ron.
And John.
Yeah, I teased you earlier, John. I gave you a little tease there.
I could have said, and remember me?
I gave John them a little bit of information early because it's 411.
People are going to be surprised. If I want people to make a note, every time we give them a piece of information in this episode, I just want them to write it down. Like, pause the episode and jot it down. And at the end, just notice how much you've got. Notice how much we're giving you for free. Once again, I want to mention that this is free.
And if you count the number of like these pearls of info that we give you, and you email us the correct number,
yeah,
something good will happen.
Yeah,
okay. We already know the number.
We've already mapped it out. We know the number, but we need to make sure you know the number. So,
right. This is like guessing how many marbles are in a jar or something. Yeah. You know, someone's going to get it right.
But we're not going to charge you to take a guess like a raffle or anything like that.
No, and we're not going to give you a prize.
Just listen.
If you win,
just listen. Well, we'll see. Good to see you guys. Had like a week off, sort of. We had a half episode come out last week where we talked about Hundreds of Beavers. Again, that movie is out on digital, and I think it's now on streaming. So you could even stream it. I forget what I should probably remember this, but you know, we talked about that last week briefly. But if you just go out there and look for Hundreds of Beavers, if you want to check this comedy out, I wanted to mention that really quickly at the top of the episode. But yeah, today's episode, we're going to get into the required viewing, which was Ronald's pick from last or week and a half, 2 weeks ago, The Wave from 2015. And then we're going to talk about a trailer that came out this week. And then John has a news item he wants to drop. And then, you know, amongst the three of us, some other movies that we've seen in theaters or at home. We'll get to those a little later in the episode. But yeah, let's start with the required viewing. Ronald, you want to kind of kick it off and remind us why you picked The Wave?
Sure. So I chose a 2015's Norwegian disaster film, The Wave. It's directed by a man named Roar Uthog. And this is, I think I heard about it through Netflix, to be completely honest with you. But it was kind of labeled as one of these sleeper movies with incredible sound. So, you know, I thought that I'd jump on it. One of its stars, Christopher Joner, you may have seen him in The Revenant. I guess that's where I've seen his face before. And then a bunch of other Norwegian action films and things like that. He's a very good dramatic actor. Besides that, I've seen Andal Torp in a couple of movies. I think The Quake might be one of them, but yeah, she's a great actress who plays his wife, Christopher Joner's wife, Edun. And it's about
so she's in a movie called The Quake. Is it another disaster movie?
Yes, another disaster movie.
Okay,
which I've seen. Funny enough,
for the hat trick.
Like, what's next? Do you think
Tsunami?
Sinkhole.
Yes. Well, I guess Tsunami is sort of covered here. Yeah, Sinkhole.
Yeah. Wildfire.
Take note. These are information nuggets.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Sorry. Go ahead, Ronald.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. It's a Norwegian sort of mountainous area. And this gentleman is a geologist that is pretty much in his last day at the job. And, you know, when he's about to leave, he gets this kind of instinct. He hears a couple of weird behaviors going on with sort of the plates that exist near the mountain, which could lead to a tsunami. And he panics, and it looks like he's known for panicking, apparently. He's a very vigilant person, but this time he's crying wolf. They think he's crying wolf, and he's not crying wolf. There's a major shifting of the plates that's going to happen, that's going to lead to a tsunami. And now what makes this especially scary is they're basically in the middle of a mountainous area. And once this happens, once this warning happens, once it gets past the point of no return, 10 minutes to get out of this, basically the bottom point of the mountain, to get to higher ground in order to not perish. And it's loosely based on the idea that this area could really have this happen to them. Never, right. It's never happened, luckily. But this movie does a really good job of kind of making this very huge event seem like the scariest thing I've ever experienced. One of the scariest things I've ever experienced in a movie. It was terrifying. It was terrifying seeing the sort of breadcrumbs of what was gonna occur and then what eventually happened in this big tsunami that's coming towards everybody that you can see in the distance. That 10 minutes, you have 10 minutes to get everybody out of there. And I guess I want to know what you guys thought about it. I'm super curious.
Steve?
Oh,
yeah, I'd seen this back. I think we may have even mentioned it briefly on an old episode of the podcast. Like, yeah, I remember like hearing, I think you're right. I think I had maybe heard about it through Netflix or, you know, I'd seen the director's film Cold Prey. Did any of you see that? That's pretty good. It's pretty good. Yeah. I that's why his name had been familiar to me. He also did the Tomb Raider reboot with Alicia Vikander. Okay. Few years after this movie came out. But yeah, Cold Prey is kind of like, again, takes place in a mountains and
loves his mountains,
you know, kind of like a slasher kind of movie after they get stuck in a resort in the mountains. But yeah, I don't know, I kind of came to this one, I love disaster movies. The idea of it taking place in what you like, what you were describing, like a fjord, where like once they get that notification and like they have that small gap of time, you know, they're basically trapped there and it's just gonna happen, you know. That kind of setup is interesting to me, but honestly, like a bit of what makes this work so much for me, and even rewatching, I felt the same. Was like, I think even through the special effects, which I think for the most part look pretty good, yeah. And the sound's really great. But honestly, like the idea that there is still, even in a disaster flick of this scale, like a pretty good human story in it, you know, with the characters that you spend time with, specifically the ones that you mentioned. But yeah, I don't know. Just like I really liked this back when I watched it initially, but revisiting it, it definitely like makes me remember a lot of its counterparts that I've watched in the time since, and like maybe how this one definitely stands apart a little more, and is maybe a little more enjoyable, especially on a rewatch, than a lot of other disaster movies that I would say that I still enjoy. But I think again, this has like a nice element, like a human element to it, and honestly, like. Even you mentioning like, you know, that they predict this could be something that really happens, you know, like that kind of air around it. I think the movie really leans into that successfully in the sense that, and I think that makes it feel a lot more real. Like a lot of what's happening doesn't feel like you know, how sometimes in these movies, like everything just happened to line up perfectly at the right time for this disaster to happen at this point in the film. You know what I mean? Where I feel like this movie is, it feels like something that, yes, maybe it's somebody who cries wolf or, you know, is kind of a little more sensitive to some of the scary or alarming findings that they might see. But, you know, these kinds of things could happen in this kind of setting, it feels like. And I don't know. I think that just all works really well. And again, I on the rewatch, I was specifically trying to like pay attention to the special effects. And I think they look pretty good, especially because it's not like a huge budgeted film even, you know, but I think the scale of it's pretty awesome. Had you seen it, John, or had you heard of it?
No, I mean, I had heard of it maybe in the same reference point of maybe not through Netflix specifically, but as far as like a disaster film,
right.
Maybe I saw even a list of like disaster films that, you know, no one talks about, or so I don't know. It was just some way that it crossed my path, and I had it in my head that it might be kind of a harrowing depiction of something. I did not know quite what it was. I mean, I knew it involved some kind of wave. I mean, honestly, I spent the first half of this movie thinking that like maybe at some point these people were going to signal people across the way by like one person standing up with their arms up and the person next to them standing up with their arms up and doing like a wave.
Like we should do that through our video here.
Right, exactly. The wave. Yes,
we missed it, Ronald.
Get involved.
Oh,
There we go. All right. Beautiful. Yeah. But anyway, I thought, you know, is this about the people that invented that? I didn't know. But no, it was, I thought it was, it lived up to that idea of being kind of almost like a, like what you said, but I almost, it's like a feature of this movie that it keeps it kind of small. And I think throughout the movie, I was having a little bit of that question in my mind of like the nature in these movies, the way that we're following these characters. So we really care about them.
Yeah.
There's tons of people dying around them that we don't really care about. I mean, we care.
Yes.
But that we
I was thinking
that,
the same thing.
That are like it almost gives me like a cringy feeling sometimes of like I would be one of those people in the background, you know, that didn't get into a car and didn't run up the hill fast enough. And so sometimes I do wonder about the sort of privilege of the character that we're following. I don't know. It's a weird thing to say, but it's like I think about that of like, why do I care so much about this family? I think this movie gets around a lot of disaster films. There's like a cultural element to them that is weird where it's like, why are we following these characters when an entire city is being wiped out? That, you know, is full of people and culture and stuff. But I think this movie does a good job of skirting that by having the people that are we're following, they're part of the town. They're very connected to it. It's a tourist destination. So the people that are there, it's a little bit of that Jaws element of like there's a tourism season going on that people don't want to disrupt, and that's why they're reluctant to evacuate maybe earlier or to read these signals the way they could. So I think that they do a good job of creating a scenario where you're very sympathetic to the people that are dying, but you don't feel like a people are being wiped out or like a whole city. I don't know. I mean, I know it is a city. I'm just saying there are ways that the movie manages to make you care about the lead characters without feeling like you're being callous to the people that you're not necessarily caring about, because it does almost play like a horror film. Like the scenarios that they get you into are very close quarter. Like there's a huge people trapped in a room and water's getting into the room and they're running out of air. That plays like something out of a thriller or a horror film more so than a disaster film, where I always associate disaster films with having like a cast of characters and you're cutting across town and you're seeing all these different levels. This movie keeps it pretty close to the family that we're mostly concerned with, which does make me think like, oh, this is horrible for all the people that aren't the main characters. But hey, it works out pretty well for the main characters. but no, the visuals were great. There were maybe two shots where it was like, okay, the effects like didn't quite work, a compositing shot here or something there. Mm-hmm. But in general, like the shots of when the landslide starts and we see that giant wave start up, I got afraid too, Ronald. It happens at night. It's kind of mysterious. The scale of it, occasionally you get a little idea of like how quickly you would be just blown away by what's happening. There's a long scene where he can't run fast enough to get up the hill.
So he
goes back to save a woman, and then they have the option of like hiding in a car that's going to get thrown around by the wave, but at least they're in a car. And like that scene plays out just, you know, again, the tension and the suspense of that are very, like I could almost see a movie like this as kind of triggering. Speaking of something we were talking about before we started recording, I could see this movie being the type where some people just would not be able to handle that level of intensity, because it's like bracing yourself and then the wave hits and it's not like the car just goes around in the water. Instantly the wave cracks all the windows in the car, water's getting in the car. I mean, you know, you wouldn't know what way was up, and you're crawling out of that and you don't know what you're crawling into. And what he crawls into is almost like a post-apocalyptic scenario for this very small area, but it works. I mean, the idea that the wave crashing is like the big event. And then the rest of the movie deals with the fallout from that. And it would be okay if his loved ones weren't then in a small room underground that is filling with water. Like, you know, I don't know. There's just, it was a nice containment of the story. So I think it in the end, I felt like it earned that sort of focus on the family. And also, there's that thing about it's a foreign film. I don't really recognize a lot of a foreign film, but it's a Norwegian film. I don't recognize a lot of these people. I did think I saw the main couple. I'd seen them a couple times before. But anyway, just an interesting movie that to me kind of breaks the mold of the disaster film by being sort of, it feels kind of scrappy and not low budget, but it does feel like a resourceful movie that manages to make an event feel eventful without having a cast of, you know, like an ensemble cast with 20 name actors and all these big sequences. It's got one big money sequence, and then the rest of it's just kind of cleverly staged suspense stuff with some visuals that are really like that scene where he's rowing the boat across the sort of the what's left of the lake, right. I guess. And he's yeah. got, like, that's like something out of like a Mad Max movie or something like that. It was so it's totally intense. And I totally bought the idea that this pleasant little town was totally transformed. And I will say too, yeah, the movie ends with the knowledge that the real place that this is based on, experts say that the landslide could happen at any time.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well,
don't tell me that. Don't tell me about that. Don't tell me that about my town.
It's not so Baltimore. It's not set in Baltimore. So you're in luck.
Yeah. I of course, you know, had to get the highest quality. This was the Blu-ray release had a Atmos mix that's like next level. So you feel like you're
I bet the sound is incredible.
Just in it, just in the middle of it. It's so scary sounding when you're like when they first hear the waves and it's like behind you. There aren't very many movies that do that, period. That's the interesting thing. Like it the sound design in this movie, second to none. I haven't heard very many mixes like this, so it's really cool.
Nice. What are some of your other favorite disaster movies?
W? Is that the George W. Bush movie? That's a
movies that are disasters is a slightly different topic.
Oh, like actually like weather-based. Oh, okay.
Man, what are some of the good ones? Armageddon, I gotta say. I love Armageddon.
What's the one about the boat? It's like it sinks or something.
Titanic.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
Titanic.
I mean, it's a little more blockbuster-y, but I love Twister. And they got the sequel.
Twister, that's a good one. That's a good one.
Is Contagion a disaster movie?
Oh.
I think it kind of fits the mold. I mean, it's funny. It's funny. I'm looking at a list now, and I can see... you know, a lot of these like airport and things like that from the 70s that like I think set the mold. The Poseidon thing is like, you know, it's a similar thing.
What is that one called with
Does War of the Worlds count as a disaster movie? Because I love that movie.
It's like the disaster movie treatment of a
an
alien invasion. But it does that. You know, I was thinking of War of the Worlds while watching this. I was like the way that you're following a guy who's doing whatever he can to save his family, and the movie's even kind of acknowledging that idea that I was talking about before of like, why is it that these people? Why should you root for these people when you know what's happening is on this huge scale? But I mean, I always tell myself, as much as those questions can be interesting kind of philosophically, well, you're following the story of these people. That's why they keep surviving, because if they didn't, there wouldn't be a movie. I was thinking of War of the Worlds in this, because it has a similar sense of just reality being turned upside down in the middle.
She realizes that kid Sandre is just gone, there's just like this mom energy. You just feel like, you know, that panic, like, I gotta get to him wherever he is.
How about the scene where he finds the shuttle from the hotel and he goes in and has to search it? And when he realizes they're not on it, there's like this one little moment of him kind of catching his breath after he realizes they're not on the bus. Because it's like, oh shit, that means where? But also like, oh God.
Yeah.
Because he's expecting to turn his flashlight one way and see his son dead or his wife dead. And he doesn't. Yeah. So it's like the mystery is still there. I don't know. It was just one of those moments that stood out to me, because it is this moment of him basically just going like, I'm kind of on the verge of a panic attack and I'm containing myself. And then we actually have that one guy who basically has a panic attack and totally loses it.
What was that?
Oh, that guy was nuts. But that's like a horror movie kind of idea to have like the guy in the bunker with you. He's the guy that goes nuts, because he like starts trying to kill her son. Maybe he's trying to like save the heir. But I think that he's like he loses his wife in a really sad way, and he didn't even want to get, like, technically they would have died in the bus if they hadn't gone inside. I don't know. It's a situation, and that guy just really had a bad turn. But he does lose it.
When she told him to turn his head. Oh God, man, that was rough. But he did. Yeah, he deserved it. It was One person or the other, I guess.
That's the part that got me the most was the small piece of air, and like they're breathing in that one little area, and you realize just how claustrophobic you would feel in that moment, you know. Anyway, Steve,
the other tsunami one that came to mind, I thought of like when I watched this. Actually, it came out a couple years before The Wave, but The Impossible.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen that.
It's Jay Bayona, and it stars. It's the one with a very young Tom Holland, isn't it? Spidey and Ewan McGregor, Naomi Watts, and Ewan McGregor. It's really good. It's got awesome special effects, and it is brutal, but it's really good. I would definitely recommend that one. And the other one I wanted to give a shout out to, this came out during the pandemic, like the summer of this, you know, 2020, no expectations whatsoever. And you say a Gerard Butler, you know, movie, and you know, people will feel a certain way about what movies he puts out now, but he had a movie come out that summer called Greenland. Did either of you
just thinking
that?
About that one? Yeah. No, I haven't seen it, but I've heard somebody say it's decent.
It is sneaky good, man. It's really good. It's way better than most of the stuff he puts out now. Scott Glenn is in it, and oh god, what's the actress who's in transition here in a moment is in
Marina Baccarin.
I'm
a huge fan. Right.
Marina Baccarin.
Yeah,
Baccarin. Sorry. Yeah.
She was on Firefly, right? That was where I first saw her.
Yeah.
But yep, Firefly, Homeland.
Yeah.
V. She was also on V. Remember that show?
The reboot.
Yeah.
No, but that's a good one. Like, nobody knows that movie. And that was way better than I had any expectations.
That was a good one.
It was good. It was very good. And that's like a comet coming to Earth to destroy the planet, kind of doomsday thing. But
terrifying.
But yeah, definitely check out The Impossible also, Ronald. You would cool. really like that one.
Who has the next pick?
It's Steve.
It's me, and I'm going with a recency kind of deal here.
Okay,
a month or so ago, I talked about the movie Snack Shack that came out in theaters. I went and saw it, loved it. And the filmmaker, I recognize his name. Adam Raymeyer had done a film with, I think that was also in 2020. I have to look it up to be sure, but he made a movie called Dinner in America that I had heard really great things about. And Kyle Gawner is an actor who I really like. He was probably most recently in Smile. Most people would probably remember him from that. But he's like a horror scream queen. Like, he's in tons of horror films. Like, he was in the Scream reboot or legacy sequel, requel, whatever you call them. But he is in that movie. And he's, and, you know, I haven't seen the film. I've heard it's great. I always see him promoting this movie on Twitter like all the time. Like, any chance he gets to talk about Dinner in America. It's a movie that came out, didn't get a real theatrical release during the pandemic. I think it went straight to Hulu, where it still is available. And just recently, because of Snack Shack coming out, you know, he's kind of been fresh out there talking about Adam's first film, which he is one of the stars of. But the IMDb description is, an on the lam punk rocker and a young woman obsessed with his band unexpectedly fall in love and go on an epic journey together through America's decaying Midwest suburbs. But it's supposed to be great. And again, it's on Hulu, and it's just in my mind because recently, again, I saw Snack Shack and I love that. And if anybody, you know, hasn't seen Snack Shack, I highly recommend. I think it's on video on demand now. But yeah, his other film, his first film, Dinner in America, is on Hulu, and that will be my pick for next week's episode.
All right.
Cool.
Oh, I like it.
So, trailer. Well, I mentioned we have a trailer to talk about. The Deadpool and Wolverine trailer, like the full trailer, came out.
Yes.
On Monday.
The first trailer was kind of a Deadpool trailer with a little taste of Wolverine, as though we didn't know Wolverine was going to be in it, which I guess the average person...
Or what he's
going
to look like, yeah.
Right. We didn't, you know, that was a way to start selling the concept to people. But this one, this trailer is sort of the full and Wolverine part of the of the equation. So I don't know. I mean, I guess, you know, this is the only MCU movie that is going to be in theaters this year. There was a sense that maybe this one was one of their kind of Hail Mary passes as far as getting people invested in a real way in a movie, getting some hype going. They've had, I mean, again, I did see someone recently say, for all the talk about the MCU kind of having it, you look at recent movies, it's like, they've had some pretty good movies in that span of time where they weren't grabbing the cultural subconscious, but the idea that this movie might be tipping towards that, that general interest is high enough.
Right.
It, so it's like, I don't know, as people who do this show and talk about these movies and who have a you know, a lot of the MCU movies that we like or love, you know, I had that general thought of just, I'm interested in a lot of things, but I don't know what other people are interested in. But I had it in my mind that Deadpool, and especially Deadpool and Wolverine, was something that like people might be interested in. And so, I don't know, to me, I told you guys in the text, like, It feels like a trailer that's selling a real movie as opposed to something that kind of feels like it might be a movie or something where they're not sure what they're selling. I just sense a kind of confidence behind exactly what I just said. They seem to feel that they've got something that people are interested in, and so they're hyping it in a way that feels, I don't know, it felt good to me. Like, it felt like there's still some juice in this, you know, cinematic universe. And I'm really intrigued, you know, on an emotional level. I think if you're going to bring Logan back after the movie Logan, you got to have a good take and you got to have a good reason. And I don't know, this just feels like they may have something here. So I don't know, what do you guys think of the trailer? And what, you know, Ronald, how do you feel about the chances that this movie might actually recapture some of that magic that people have been missing?
I'm excited. I think that Spider-Man, No Way Home, is that the last one?
Mm-hmm.
No Way Home kind of introduced us to the idea that things could get a little crazy. And we could see some people that we may not expect. And that unpredictability was something that we never had in the MCU, to be completely honest. Now, with, you know, Deadpool and Wolverine, we may get a rogues gallery of, like, you know, villains we've seen before, characters we haven't seen in the MCU. So it's like opening it up in a way, you know, that I think that one of the things that I was a little afraid of, which, you know, I've kind of seen some of the reception, is that there's like a 16-year-old kid humor about this stuff, which is true. But
that's Deadpool, Ryan, right?
Yeah, and Ryan Reynolds does that. But there's equal parts heart in a lot of that stuff. Like, that's, you know, I was thinking,
yeah,
that's the key. You think about what's the movie that he did for Netflix?
The Adam Project.
Which made me cry.
Agreed, same.
Nonstop. I mean, it was a masterpiece of a
People
movie.
People don't know, you just stopped to record this episode. But you'll probably start crying the second we finish recording.
Yeah, I'll just get back to it. I'm just thinking about scenes.
Yeah,
and even Ryan Reynolds and, like, you think of Hugh Jackman, Ryan Reynolds, and Sean Levy. Even, you know, people have their feelings about Sean Levy. You know, him being directing this film, or, you know, talks about him doing a Star Wars movie. Like, the dude has found a lot of success, and he's a very successful director. And you can have your feeling about him. I'm a fan, honestly.
I know. I was thinking about it today, Steve. It's like,
I'm a big fan.
It'd be real easy to play it cool and not like Sean Levy, like, as a rule. But, like, I think he's good. I think he's done some good things. Yeah. And I think that he's one of those guys that when he talks about the shit, at the very least, for this type of material, you got to consider that he's got, like, a Russo Brothers level of understanding what a movie needs and, like, what the shot means to get a chance to do this. But I also think, after seeing his stuff he's done with Stranger Things, it's like, I think the guy can do genre really well on a scale that is, like, keeping the emotions in play. So I feel like he's another ingredient that makes me think that's a guy who probably doesn't want to screw up his shot to do this movie. Hugh Jackman is coming back. He doesn't want to make that cheap. Ryan Reynolds probably sees this as a huge shot to turn Deadpool into one of the kind of linchpins and saviors of this huge whatever's rolling forward. So I, not to say that means it's going to be good. I just don't think these are people that phone it in and do half-ass shit. So
there's a story that Lil Rel tells about Ryan Reynolds and Free Guy, and how much Ryan really pushed for him to be in this movie. He kind of banked on him to be this.
Yeah,
he saw this actor who was kind of untested in this way, and he knew that there was, like, a range of emotion that he could bring to it. And I think Ryan, for, you know, one of the things that makes him so disarmingly, I'm going to kick him in his balls, is that he knows his shortcomings as a person. You know, like, he's like, look, in order to make this thing good, we need everybody. He's not like, I can handle this all myself and make this the best. Sure, he can. You know he can. We know he can.
Well, we know he can carry a movie. Like the question of can Ryan Reynolds carry a movie? Whatever you think of him, you can't deny that he can carry a movie.
But no, knowing that, you know, you can have other elements, other actors and actresses that can make it, that can elevate it to another level. Mm-hmm. It's something that he's really smart at. He's very good at quarterbacking these situations, as we've seen. And just hearing the story that Laurel tells about him, and it feels like he won't. I don't know if he's ever said this directly, but it feels like he's really trying to, like, it feels like an homage to Hugh Jackman. Like, I think he loves Hugh Jackman in a way that
totally,
like,
does.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, and I think it's easy to forget that, you know, he's a fanboy of this sort of thing, even though he's like tall and handsome and muscular, he still likes what Hugh Jackman brought to the table, which, you know, for context, you know, that was like Blade, who was incredible, broke the mold. There's Iron Man, who broke the mold in some ways. But then there was Wolverine. When Wolverine came on the screen for the first time, people shit their pants for context. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to remember this stuff because it was so, we're so far removed from.
But I mean, for me, someone who grew up reading those comics, it was, I remember that feeling of like, this movie is not like faithful to this or that. I don't really care about this or that because they got a couple things so right. Professor Xavier was one. Magneto was pretty fucking strong too. Mm. But so strong that I cursed when I said it. And then Wolverine. And the casting of the other folks was good too. I mean, I feel like James Marsden doesn't get enough love. I don't know that Halle Berry really pops off the screen as Storm, but that's good casting.
Should have been Angela Bassett.
Hugh Jackman was right. It should have. Hugh Jackman was just someone we hadn't seen before playing this iconic part, and it was instantly, you're right.
A movie star. Like,
and I think what this movie does seem to be doing, and where it got me as like a nerd from this, you know, the 80s, was that like they're selling us on that idea of like Wolverine. There's some kind of reality, this version that we're getting, he's from where maybe he let people down, or maybe it's the one we saw, but maybe it's a different one. I think that they've got room to play, but as far as a way to bring the X-Men into this new, you know, they've got those toys to play with now. This feels like a really smart way. Like, now that I've seen the trailer and I can see how they're doing it, it feels like a really smart way to sort of one more little appearance. Like, we've had the Beast popping up in that post-credit scene from Marvel's. We've had the version of Professor X that was in Multiverse of Madness. And now we're getting this version of Wolverine. And it's starting to feel like a little of that old MCU, there's a plan kind of thing cooking where, we're about to get the X-Men in a big way. And, you know, I like that stuff. I love the soap opera of the X-Men. So, and even X-Men 97. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. Crap. That's a huge signpost, I think, to the types of sort of the mythology they want people to be thinking about.
For sure.
So, I don't know. This just feels, you know, I had a real nerdgasm when I saw this. Like, you know, I wasn't even really like, I was like, oh, I'm excited to see this. But when I saw it, I was just like, okay, no, this trailer did what I needed it to do for me. Yeah. And I the 16-year-old, the juvenile humor, to me, that's not even the humor of the movie. That's the humor of Deadpool, the character.
Yeah.
And like, he's supposed to be kind of an obnoxious guy, right? Like, we're supposed to think he's a little too much. So to me, the fact that they're actually doing that and keeping to that kind of hard R idea, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of them celebrating the fact that they got to be R-rated. But that also, there's probably going to be some laughs in there. I'm probably going to enjoy it. So I don't know. I can't hate on it too much just for being kind of, you know, juvenile or brotastic or whatever the criticism is.
The thought I was trying to get at before with even bringing Sean Levy up was that I think like what this movie you can tell already is going to have from the trailer is like the heart that he puts into all of his films. Mm-hmm. You brought up the Adam Project, even Free Guy, and even going even further back to Sean's relationship with Hugh in Real Steel. Do you remember Real Steel?
Mm-hmm. So good.
Right. It's got that heart.
I love
Real
Steel.
I don't know if I actually saw that one, but I wanted
it's
to.
So great.
I think the robot fighting thing.
Yes. Father, son. Yeah, it's great. But I don't know. Like that relationship of what his films always bring to the table. Obviously, Hugh and Ryan's real life relationship. And, you know, the fact that they've always wanted to be. There's been the teases of the Deadpool and Wolverine together. And to be able to, you know, have the opportunity to do it on this scale. You know, with the real the only real tentpole that Marvel has this year. And like John mentioned, like, it's a very real and probably smart opportunity to kind of place Deadpool into like a key fixture of whatever's going forward. And obviously some iteration of the X-Men,
yeah.
But whether it's Hugh or not, it's just like nothing in the trailer to me played like a misstep. Like, it really does feel like they know they have the movie that they really, really need right now. And it's why it's like coming out in July, and it's the one of this whole year, because it's the one that probably is going to give them the best chance. Like we've talked about on prior episodes, like, yeah, you do really like these movies when they're this good.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And the other thing I want to say, like, not that I've tried to read any spoilers. I try to stay away from as much as possible for this film, but I really do appreciate that in the trailer, even though there's some Easter eggs and some little nuggets here and there, there's a very real sense of like, we've probably seen like the first 20, 30 minutes of this movie, you know, like, there's nothing even hinted at. And I hope they stick with that. And whatever they have planned in terms of like reveals or cameos or anything exceptional, that you get to see that the first time, you know, in the theater when you go see that film, if it comes to be realized the way that, you know, the rumors are or what we've heard or whatever. Honestly, much like they did for No Way Home, like, everybody knew that Andrew and Toby were going to be in that movie somewhere, but like, no one saw it, you know, prior to the movie coming out. And that was magic, you know.
And you didn't know how it was going to pop up. And even if you knew how it was going to pop up, you didn't know when. And even if you felt it coming, you weren't prepared for how emotionally they nailed the sort of made that work was that then the characters had this funny, touching relationship with each other that was instant. Yeah, and that idea of like trading war stories, like that whole Peter Parker thing, they really found a way to make us care even more about Peter Parker by having Peter Parker realize how tough Peter Parker has it. We'll probably get to say more about this movie as we get closer to it. But I just wanted to. I'm glad we got to kind of jump. You know, we used to be. There was a brief period where we flirted with being Marvel all the time. I'm glad those days are gone. But I'm glad we can still get our blood up for a new thing. I just wanted to kind of one other topic. I wanted to talk about with you guys this last week or so. The news broke that Quentin Tarantino ditched his long-running planned next film, the Movie Critic, which has had so many weird rumors about what it might be and who might be involved and changes in terms of what the focus of the movie might be. And even after this announcement that he was kind of shit-canning the project or at least shelving it, there was even more talk about what the movie might have been that we didn't quite expect. But anyway, Quentin Tarantino has done this before, shuffled the order of things, or like, I think Hateful Eight, the script leaked, and then he put that off for a while. So this is no new thing for him to kind of move things around like this. What is sort of a new thing is that this is that whole 10 movies thing of his where he said that people, you know, freak out when they get old and they don't make good shit. And he wanted to quit while he was still, at his best. And so he announced he was going to quit after 10 movies. I just have it in my head that, you know, whatever the other reasons might be, that the reason why he shuffled this movie out of this slot is because he doesn't think it should be his last movie. And I wonder, just what do you guys think of that? My personal take is that I think it's a mind trap that he set for himself, where now he's going to really overthink this next film because he's going to be thinking, should this be my last movie or not? And he's either going to be trying to make a last movie or trying to react against the idea of what a last movie should be, when really he should just do an interview and say, guess what? I'm going to do a couple more or a few more. I don't know. But I still am going to try to quit before I start making shit. And he should just drop it because it's that weird promise. I mean,
totally drop it. Yeah.
Like, this show had a podcast promise. There was a point where on the 175th episode, Ronald said we were going to do as many more. And we had to do 175 more episodes before we were free from the podcast promise. But I know how much better this show has been since we've been freed from that promise. So I want to encourage Quentin Tarantino to free himself from that suggestion. I mean, we know what he means by it. But what's funny is you can pick so many directors that have made great stuff in their 60s and 70s and into their 80s that it's like even that assertion becomes a weird thing to stand by and live and die by. And I guess that's what I just wanted to hear what you guys think of it. I was looking forward to seeing the movie critic, whatever it was going to be. He still might make it. But don't you think he's going to have to at some point say, no, I'm not just doing 10. I don't know what I was smoking. Yeah. Or do you think he's going to stick to it? And it's just going to mean it's going to be 5 years before we get another movie because he's got a complex now.
I mean, I don't have, I guess, that much to add that you just said, but yeah, I do feel like he needs to drop this. Like, you know, wherever that idea came up or who suggested or he suggested or whatever the context was, I can't remember how it all started, but I think that's just a bunch of crap. Like, you know, there's filmmakers out there making some of their best stuff in the, you know, arguably some of their best stuff later on in life. For him to have that kind of outlook, I think is... I don't know, selfish or I don't know. The selfish, I guess, is the right word I'm thinking about. But I mean, this movie sounded like it could be a very interesting kind of good, great, fun movie.
Right.
You know, and for it to maybe not become realized, especially the rumors around who was possibly involved because he doesn't see it as the last film. I mean, just let go of that idea and just make the next best movie you have ready to go and let what comes next let it come when it comes. It's just like to kind of cherry pick that stuff it almost feel like over managing everything.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You're going to over manage your output and your creativity to a point that if you decide that something is your last one and it comes out and people don't like it, you're not going to let that be your last one anyway. You're going to come back knowing who he is. He's not going to let that be how he goes out, arguably because his last one was maybe his most successful one in a lot of ways, you know? But yeah, I don't know. Come on, drop it. That's my feeling about it. Just let it go.
What do you think, Ronald?
I think the same energy that makes him shit on whole decades of movies is the same energy that kind of creates these walls for himself. You know what I mean? Like he's a stickler for his word. And I think that you just make mistakes sometimes, you know, like sometimes circumstances can make you say things, you know, things you'll regret. And I think that he loves making films. We love seeing what he has to offer. I don't love every single movie he's ever done, but I love most of them. And I can honestly say that I love at least 3-4 things out of a movie that I see from him, a scene or a block of dialogue or Tupac's verse being used in Slave Times. I don't know how that happens. It just, Quentin is a strange, strange man that makes quite a few masterpieces, and it's just really interesting to see him put himself in a box like that. Now, if he dumps this, I need to see Kill Bill Volume 3.
Well, that's what a lot of people have said, is that going to be the final one? And that's cool, but even as much as I'm sure that could be great, I don't know that I am like so into it, like that I would say his final one should be something that he's kind of a road he's been down before. But it does, it's exactly what you're saying. Like, isn't that one that everyone thinks he should do? If he was not stuck to this 10 movie rule, then that would just be assumed to be one of the ones he's going to do. But now it's like, is that going to be the last one? And then it becomes a little weird. I that would be a great left field thing, but I wonder if that project has just, I mean, I don't think that the studio quite knows what to do with Star Trek at this point. So I feel like that would be a long journey to a finished movie if he were to say this is my next one. What I got more was the impression he had a story idea or something and someone else went and wrote a script based on it and he was maybe going to direct it or something. You know, I don't know. But yes, wouldn't it be cool to see him do something wild and left field like that? I would be cool. But I also think one of the things we love about Tarantino is he's the world builder of his own little weird insular universe, and like he doesn't need to do a IP that belongs to somebody else. I mean, Jackie Brown being an adaptation notwithstanding, he doesn't need to. He's got his own you know, QT universe. But yeah, it would be fun to see if he wasn't sticking to this 10 movie thing. It would be fun to say, oh, he can do a journeyman thing once in a while of just stepping into a franchise like that. Oh, Quentin Tarantino does a James Bond movie. I'm sure most people would go see that, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just an odd thing. And for someone who is so creative and makes such interesting movies, it's weird to think that he doesn't think he's got more than one good movie in him. I don't even see how that could be true. It's like he knows he's trying to quit while he's ahead. And that is weird. And yeah, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, maybe if that was your second to last planned movie, you would think you were about done. But then that movie comes out and everyone pretty much loves it, you know, and it's great. It's just a weird thing. Like, we're not thinking about this with any other director that we like, because no other director that we like has said, I'm only going to make a certain number of movies, you know?
So. Right. Right. What a choice. What a choice.
But I hope, what's his name? Paul Hauser. What's his name?
Mike? Paul Walter Hauser.
Paul Walter Hauser. He was one of the people that was rumored to be in this. And it's like, I was loving the idea of seeing him in the Tarantino, like what Tarantino would do with a guy like that. So, maybe he'll still do it. Like he eventually did with Hateful Eight, where he just, you know, revamped it. So what other things have we seen? Steve, you tried to see a movie.
Yeah, I was on vacation last week. I tried to go see Alex Garland's Civil War. Been on my list for a while. Came out while I was on vacation with my friends that we do a weekly movie night together. It was like, seems perfect. Everybody saw the trailer, wanted to see it, went to the movie, and it was playing in the Dolby House, which is a nice bonus. 30 minutes into the movie, though, my wife and my buddy's wife, both of them were just done. They couldn't watch the movie anymore, and they wanted to leave. Specifically, my wife, she was having
this humble brag that you have a wife.
Yeah, my wife. she was having like a visceral response to the movie, like a panic attack almost. Just like even only 30 or 40 minutes into the film, it's pretty violent and pretty explicit and, you know, challenging on a level that, you know, this would be a world that we live in a near future, possibly. And, right. You know, and seeing that violence, I think it just was kind of upsetting her and scaring her, and which I could feel her looking at me in my peripheral and like, oh man, I had to worry about this and it's being realized. So yeah, I didn't finish Civil War. I want to go back and check it out. What I saw, I thought was great. Again, 40-ish minutes of it. But I need to find time to go check that out, hopefully while it's still in theaters, so I can report back. But yeah, not the best experience, but definitely a unique one.
Well, I mean, I honestly, when I saw the trailer, though, I was like, I think it looks really good. But yeah. I also was a little afraid of it. Like, is this movie going to be too intense? Is this movie going to incite something? I don't think that it quite hit with the kind of level that it's like... Like, I remember, honestly, when I saw Fight Club, I was like, are people going to take the wrong message from this movie and society is going to crumble? And it's like, no, it didn't happen. There were some dirtbags that took the wrong message from that movie, and then that was that. And this movie, I wondered about. But, so I could see that. I guess I'm just saying, whenever it's kind of close to real life and it's like doing what this movie's trying to do, which is trying to show you how delicate the balance is and what it would look like just to see the idea of war-torn country and the United States of America, those two ideas overlaid is something that in our lifetime we hope to never see, and it could change overnight, you know? So, I could definitely see this movie being a little bit different from the average, oh, this is a little violent or this is a little nihilistic or something. This is a little... this is an actual depiction of a nightmare that I've had. You know what I mean? So, totally. So I could see that being too much for people, especially if people are not necessarily going in for the kind of violence. Like, I sometimes forget that I know people who just won't, like, I'll tell someone something about, I'll refer to Breaking Bad and find out that a friend of mine said, oh, I started watching that show, but I stopped because it was just too violent. And I'm like, well, you're not wrong, but what does it say about me that I wasn't that put off by it and I stayed with it, you know? So I'm very curious about this, and I was going to try to see it before this conversation, but I still believed, like, I'm sure that movie is going to rattle me a little bit just because I think about that delicate balance all the time in reality. Yeah. So, but I heard the movie kind of depoliticizes it a little by creating a scenario that's not really the scenario? Like, aren't Texas and California kind of unified? Which is not something that would really happen in our political climate. So that puts it a little bit into a different world. You know what I mean? It's not commenting on real world politicians and policies that are happening right now, which is probably a wise move. But did you feel like the movie was trying to stay away from real politics in any way? Or was it kind of going, wink, wink, we all know what this is about?
I don't know that I can answer it from what I saw. Like, it didn't really get to that point. It was kind of some allusions to some of the politics involved in what got them to the point that they were in. But I honestly don't think I got far enough. Like, the pieces I saw were much more about Kirsten Dunst and Wagner Morrow, and I can't remember what's the other girl's name who just played Priscilla. She's in the new Alien film this summer as well.
I don't know her name, but I can picture her.
Yeah.
And then there's the dude from Dune. I love that character actor.
It was really like just an introduction to them on the front line and their decision to try to make it to the Capitol and get an interview with the president, played by Nick Offerman. So it was really just some time with them as they make this decision to trek to this, you know, danger zone, which is almost, you know, there's this aura of like, you're going to be shot on premises, or, you know, as soon as you try to get into the White House kind of thing. But it was really kind of just like an introduction to what they're doing on the road, and like the way that their journalism and their photojournalism are kind of like accept it during this time of war, and kind of how they navigate it. But that stuff I thought was really good so far, but I don't think I can answer the political piece yet, John.
Kaylee Spaney, I think is the name.
Kaylee Spaney, yeah.
And then the actor that we weren't naming was Stephen McKinley Henderson. He's the
McKinley,
guy
yeah.
that I love from.
Yeah, they were great. I mean, like, they're great actors, as you know, that stuff was awesome, you know, in terms of their dynamic together. But I mean, it is pretty, I mean, I gotta say, you know, it's pretty brutal. Like, the scene, there's a scene where like they're like, I don't know, I can't remember exactly the context, but like, it's Kirsten Dunst, like there's like these flashes of like photos that she's taken during this time, and it plays out a scene where like these guys are beating up a guy, and they put like a tire over his arms, like, so he can't move. And then they literally like pour lighter fluid and light him on fire.
Mm.
And like, it sits on it, and she's just standing there watching it, taking photos. Like, she's just like numb to it, and, or at least broken towards it. And that scene right there, that was a scene that I think just broke Aaron. And she was like, I can't, we gotta go. It's tough, man. I can acknowledge it's that's only 30 minutes into it. But I've heard that from a few different people. Like, a guy I work with made a comment about it. I think they actually finished the film, but they were like, you know, wherever you fall on like how good the movie was, it's like, it was hard to watch. But hopefully I can make it back and see it, and I'll report back. Or if you guys check it out, we can all report back eventually on it.
Maybe it gets really cheerful after the first 40 minutes, you know?
Yeah, it turned. It turned for the better. Everybody realizes, like, what are we fighting for, guys?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Let's be more civil.
Yeah.
It's interesting that right now, as it stands, we're not in a place where war is just out in the street. And there's so many places that are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What privilege we have, man. Like, I'm watching that trailer, like, they're not like that. Not yet, at least.
Right.
That sounds terrifying, man. I could see how that could trigger her, and I'm sorry that it was that rough that she reacted that way. That's,
yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah. We'll circle back. I tried to get them to go see the movie that I know John saw instead of it, and even that they didn't want to see because they're not fans of horror films. But John, you saw Abigail, right?
Abigail, yes. Which
tell me about Abigail.
A blast. Just a blast. Oh. Like it only, I won't even say that, it's not like it it's got a good ending, but it only started to lose a little bit of momentum maybe in that last 10-minute stretch when it's trying to figure out how to end, and it's kind of rushing through some things that we want to see because it's trying to maintain its kind of, there's a kind of tone and a pace to it. I don't know why I said tone like that. Kind of tune. There's a tune and a pace. There's a tone and a pace to it that it's maintaining that makes it so that it kind of has to keep these shocks coming every 5-10 minutes. And it keeps that going up until about the last 10 minutes, which is pretty unusual, you know, for a movie really that gives away about 2/3 of its premise in the trailer. Like, it takes 40 minutes, 45 minutes to get to the point where you're caught up with the trailer. And a lot of times that is the kiss of death for a movie like this. Mm. But in this case, no, the acting, the filmmaking is just so fun. The cast is legit great for the most part. The way it unfolds is just real. I mean, like, Dan Stevens is doing a kind of different thing than you've seen him before. But he's doing that thing that Dan Stevens does of doing something a little different, if you know what I mean. Like, this one, he's doing this kind of disgraced cop kind of character that is involved in this, you know, it's basically a team of people that were put together to commit a crime. You know from the trailer what it is. But you know, it deepens on them. And so when it gets to the point where they realize that they're trapped in a house with a vampire, the movie kind of, like, that's when it becomes what it's going to become. But up to that point, every little step that it took with the almost slow burn of setting up the characters, it just really pays off. And it's that kind of good horror movie where characters die, but you feel like there is something going on that gets resolved. Like, characters get deaths that, for the most part, there's a couple of sort of shocking ones, but for the most part, the deaths are like, they're appropriate to the character's story. And like, this person dies that way, and that seems appropriate. I was texting with someone recently about this idea of, like, most horror movies are one kind of movie, and then the horror movie happens in the middle. And the best ones manage to keep both movies going from that point. Meaning, at the moment when the heroine or the hero has to do something that is like the most amazing thing they've ever done to survive, that's usually part of a person's arc in or out of some emotional state, if the movie's done its job. You know, sometimes it's just monsters chasing people, but when they really nail it, you go, oh yeah, this is like the perfect predicament for this character to find themselves in, because they're going to have to find this inner strength in more ways than one. I mean, like, the Evil Dead remake is a good example where a girl that's recovering from addiction in that situation, and suddenly you've just complicated the shit out of the Evil Dead scenario because she's got friends with her that are there for her but also aren't sure they can trust her. You know, that kind of thing. This movie has a very similar thing of, like, the way this crew is interacting. The perfect thing to do to really set things off is to then, you know, trap them in a situation where they have to kind of count on each other because this crew is barely hanging together. But Dan Stevens is great. You know, I went through several different, like, who does Melissa Barrera remind me of in this? But I kind of feel like she was kind of great. Like, I don't remember her making that much of an impression on me in the Scream movies that she was in, but I don't know. She's just, like, fun to watch and was involving. Yeah, well, I mean, there's something about someone being absolutely gorgeous. But, you know, she was reminding me of different people who just have an energy and a vibe to them, like, you know, Gina Gershon, people like that who just come into a scene and they bring some kind of something that just is, you know, holds your eye. And then Catherine Newton, she's one of my favorite people to see pop up in a movie at this point. She just does a great, she's like quietly like a scream queen. You know, she's done some solid horror and horror adjacent things. I saw where someone said she'd do good in she'd do well in a Buffy reboot. And I was like, I don't need a Buffy reboot, but I do think Catherine Newton could kind of nail the idea of that character. So I don't know, you know, Kevin Durand is another character actor. If you like him, he's fantastic in this. And then the other people that are in it, you know, it's good. I mean, it's just that movie. Like, if you were hooked by the trailer and you thought it looked fun, the movie is actually that good, that fun for most of its runtime. And it's, you know, it's an hour and 50 minutes long or something like that. So
can't wait.
Yeah. I mean,
how's Will Catlett in it? I like Will Catlett.
Which one is he? Oh,
black dude.
You know, I don't want to say more. He's really good. Okay. He's really good. I will say that there's a few characters like that where what they do with them is interesting based on the kind of footing they're trying to put you on. And so, like, this crew you start with, you form opinions of them right away, and he's one of the most solid characters in that opening stretch where you go, like, okay, this guy doesn't seem as he doesn't seem as awful as some of the other people. But you'll you know, watching the movie, you start to understand why this particular team was assembled. And I don't know. Yeah. Very interesting, kind of enigmatic character. And I couldn't tell if I recognized him from something.
He was a 12 o'clock boys. Whatever okay. What's the movie adaptation of it? Was it?
I think that's it. Yeah.
It was called 12 o'clock boys. No. It was called something else.
Yeah. You're right. It was named something else. The
but doctors. Okay. Yeah. So one of the interesting things about him is he's from the DMV area. He's one of the few actors that has 2DQ in his. When you hear him speak, I love it, man. It just reminds, just gives me a warm feeling inside.
Well, I mean, that might be one of the things I was talking about, that he just makes an impression. He does have like almost an interesting rhythm to the way that he speaks. But it's case in point for this movie that it's pretty impeccably cast. I mean, it's cast very much like a Scream movie or a slasher film or something like that, where you get, you know, the crew of people you get together is just that their personalities kind of complement each other. So you do get a little bit, oh, here's the dumb guy and here's the other slightly almost as dumb guy. Wow. We get two dumb guys in this, but they're both dumb in different ways. But no, I think, I mean, yeah, the best I can say is just, it's that movie. Like, you know, Steve, I'm interested in the cinema score idea of like, is the movie that you were sold? This, to me, I don't know what the cinema score for this movie is, but I would say this is a high cinema score, because if you like the trailer, this is that movie. This is the movie that you're being sold in the trailer, 100%. And I didn't even mention the actress that plays Abigail. She's fantastic. She like, you know, whatever you think.
She was in Matilda, right?
Is that who she is? Yeah.
Yeah, she was in the Netflix the remake of Matilda. Oh. She was awesome in that too. So I'm excited.
Alicia Weir is her name, though. Yeah. And she kind of owns this movie, and that kind of self-possessed child performance that just makes you wonder, like, what is this kid like in real life that they're able to, like, nail this tone? Because she has to do some pretty crazy stuff, but she also has to play, like, a little kid at some parts. And she does both things really convincingly.
Can't wait. What else we got? Ronald, you watched something at home this week, right?
Yeah, give us one thing. I did.
I just want to say before I start, thank you so much to Universal
that would be enough, I think, Universal.
Yeah. The kind people that gave us access to this movie. But 2024's Monkey Man, directed by Dev Patel, I guess distributed by Monkey Paw, which is really cool. I mean, it's been a part of the story of selling this whole thing, but this movie was supposed to go straight to streaming. Jordan Peele got an early look at it, intervened and wanted to give this a proper theatrical run, and it's really interesting because he's been a part of the whole like media run,
right?
Which has been really cool to see.
I mean, basically what you just said is kind of part of the hype of this movie, is that
for sure.
In fact, it was first thing I remember hearing about it was, here's a movie that Jordan Peele likes so much he forced it into theaters,
you know? right,
which is cool. I mean, it's a cool thing for his shingle to be responsible for that kind of
Monkey
movie.
Paw distributed Monkey Man. Just so think of this like, remember that movie Mayhem! Exclamation mark.
Mayhem!
So imagine Mayhem with more heart. You know, the tragedy is maybe more explicit, maybe more awful somehow than Mayhem. But the redemption is even more interesting. It's just like this idea that you know, there's the upper class is the upper class for a reason. And there's very little ways to get above sort of the line that you were born in. It's like a genetic lottery. And it's really cool commentary on that. Dev Patel's directorial debut, and it's really cool. Now, one thing I will say, you talk about things being sold to you that it isn't really. This isn't John Wick. This is like a movie with incredible fight scenes, but at the heart of it, it's kind of him getting revenge through, you know, this tragedy happens to him, and then he has to find a way to get to this gentleman that created the chaos that he's kind of experienced the trauma. And half the movie is him getting to that, which is actually really interesting, because it's not like, you know, you'll watch a movie, you know, like Creed 3. He's like, I want to fight you. And then he gets to fight. This isn't like that. It takes
like some movies are such a straight line that they have to find some other way to make themselves interesting, you know, because there's not really a story there.
It takes the whole entire movie to get to a point where he can see this guy. I mean, he has an attempt and it fails. But it's really one of those movies that takes this whole idea that it you know, the power structure is a little crazier than you think, and it's just done really well. It's the fight scenes are incredible, the acting's incredible. You don't get much time to really relax because it's nonstop. Every time you think that, you know, he gets a little advantage, it gets taken away. It's really cool how it's done, and the explanations are done, the backstory is done throughout the movie rather than just the, you know, the first scene being like exposition and then, you know, they're like, oh, okay, this is how it's spread out pretty well. And then it really has a couple of twists that I really enjoy. It's vulgar. It's very vulgar and very violent. So get ready for that. I love that. Dev, if this is the beginning of Dev's career, I can't wait to see what he has next, because this is like a masterclass in action filmmaking, man. Like it's so good. I know that the cinematographer did like 28 Days Later and a couple other movies, but this is like it's done really well. It's just done really well. Nice. I would say go see this movie, rent it. I think it's like $25 right now, 'cause it's like, you know, the beginning of such things, but to rent it, I think it's like $6-$7. It's worth seeing. It's incredible. Dev is a force, man. It's really weird because I was like expecting it to be pretty good, but it's really good.
You know, I've seen a lot of talk about the political critique or political allegory of this film and whether it nails it or misses the mark. And it's like every time I look at stuff like this, I have to say that I don't know if I have the frame of reference enough to judge whether it's being done with nuance, because this is it's not based on the culture that I'm ensconced in and that I know. Yes. And so it's like, well, which source do I believe? Because some people are saying, oh, this has got a political commentary that really packs a punch. And other people are saying, oh, it really misses the mark. So there's, I don't know. I don't know if I would even think about that while watching the movie if I hadn't read those articles. But did you get so a sense specific. Of any of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's so specific. Like, there's like, I mean, sure. Like, if you take the generic message of it, it's you could take a lot from it. But yeah, you're right. There's some specificity to the point that Dev's trying to hit home. That could be a pretty universal message as well. I mean, I don't know how. That's the weird part. I don't know how disconnected from our political system that somebody could be where they wouldn't see some parallels between.
Oh, something, you know, relatable in it, you're saying, no matter
it's
what.
Just people in power abusing power. That's like a thing. And the way that this gentleman, and I'm pretty sure they're talking about this.
Ronald, wait a minute. You're saying the people in power, those are the ones that have been abusing the power?
Yeah, man.
Shit.
Yeah, that's
we got a real problem. Do you have to?
Yeah.
Am I the only one who sees that this is a real problem?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, between political messages and Monkey Man and
woke, Civil War,
woke 97, ex woke 97, and in Civil War, it's just like, where? You think that they wouldn't be trying to take a jab at our realities of?
You're suggesting that the woke mind virus is a mutation.
Yes.
So when can I expect my powers?
Tomorrow.
Oh, cool. Cool. Thank you. That's a great answer. Yeah, I'll get a good night's sleep.
What else have you guys seen?
I think I'm good.
Yeah, same, man.
I, we can get into it another episode, but just I wanted to put it on everyone's radar. It came out a week or two ago, but I finally caught up with Fallout.
Oh, yeah.
Amazon Prime.
You watched
it? Incredible.
Next up for me. I've heard nothing but great stuff.
I think I have two episodes left, but I've been devouring that.
I haven't watched it yet.
That's been just really great. Love it. That's what I've been watching when we got back from the trip. I've been catching up on that. That's the only one I really wanted to say. We'll maybe talk about it later. But
no, I was hoping to watch some of it before tonight, but just didn't have time. But it's next up on my, my list of stuff to stream. So maybe next time we'll all have dipped in. And Shogun just finished its season, which you haven't caught up on yet, Steve. But Ronald, have you seen it yet? The finale?
Yeah.
Of Shogun?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Pretty friggin' heavy ending, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I can't wait to talk about it. Was it heavy?
For me, it was pretty damn heavy.
No, I mean, was it heavy?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just asking, was it heavy? Because I heard it wasn't heavy.
What just happened?
I don't know.
It wasn't as heavy as everybody thought it was. All right. Everything we're looking at isn't what we're looking at. Have you heard that?
You mean the sort of. Well, yeah, maybe yeah. this is an off mic conversation.
Take my AirPods out.
Right. Yeah.
No. I think Ronald's being as coded as he can be about it. But I just feel it's that thing where a show kind of skips over some things you thought you were going to see, and then and then dwells on the sort of emotional toll and aftermath of things more so than the actual things.
For sure.
And I think that it's it really left me. I mean, there were a couple things, and I found it that really hit me hard. But talk about it. We'll talk about it once we've seen it. But that was the info. So I wonder how many points I'm not going to spoil how many points of information there were in this episode, but if you're listening and you were pausing every time we got to one, you've got the correct number. You can send that in.
Yep.
Where do they send it, Steve?
moviesmovie@gmail.com. You can send that.
Yes.
That's an active email address, guys.
Yeah.
It is.
That's what we do. We keep email addresses active.
Yeah, we do.
Mm-hmm. We do.
We do. So we'll have another episode next week. Again, my pick for the required viewing next week is 2020's Dinner in America. Again, that's on Hulu if you want to watch that with us when we talk about it next week. And hopefully between now and then, maybe one of us or all of us will have seen another film either at home or in theaters. But maybe next week we could even maybe talk a little bit more about Fallout and Shogun just to recap the end of those first seasons. Moviesmovie.com is the website. You can go to youtube.com/moviesmoviepod. Podcast. Ronald always corrects me. Which one is it?
Podcast. Moviesmoviepodcast.
Yeah. If you go to the YouTube option, definitely want to subscribe and hit that bell to get notifications of when the new videos come out. But until next week, that's going to do it for this episode of Movie Schmovie. And as always, you've made our day. Thanks.
Bye.